Now, I've prepared to present this material in more of an informal setting, a class setting, where I want to solicit your participation and any comments you might have as we consider Barabbas and us. So in Matthew chapter 27, we are introduced to him starting in verse 11. Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor questioned him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said to him, "It is as you say." And while he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he made no answer. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" And he did not answer him even with regard to a single charge, so that the governor was quite amazed. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the multitude any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they were holding at that time a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. Now, if I were to ask you this morning to picture in your mind the three crosses of Calvary, we all would see the two on either side. And then how do we normally picture the one in the middle with reference to the one on the right or the left? What's it usually look like? Yeah, exactly. We picture it raised or higher, and certainly it was the most significant of the three, not just of that day, but for all history, the most important death. But I want you to consider this morning that when Pilate woke up as the governor of the district of Judea, he was not planning to say, "I'm going to change the course of history today," or "I'm going to put to death the Son of God between two thieves." For him, it was just three crosses. Three people who were going to be executed today because of their crimes against the Roman Empire. Now, we know for certain about the ones who were on the right and the left of Jesus. How are they described in the gospel records, these two? What were their crimes?
Thieves.
Okay, thieves. What other words do we use beside a thief?
Robber.
Robber, okay. So there's an important distinction in the Greek for those two crimes. Thief is the word, kind of where we get our word kleptomaniac. That's a person who steals. But a robber is a violent thief. A robber would be somebody not just who would steal from you, but would beat you up and harm you. Think of, for instance, the parable of the Good Samaritan, where Jesus talks about the man who's traveling on the road, and he says he fell among who? Robbers. And what did they do to him? They stripped him, they stole his things, and then they beat him and left him half dead. So these robbers were violent thieves. I don't want you to think these were men who, they were just trying to steal bread because their family was hungry. Or they just got caught at the wrong place at the wrong time. No, these were violent thieves. These were robbers. And the other gospel accounts use the word rebels and bandits. So it makes sense that they were probably partners in crime. They were of the same band, and it makes sense, doesn't it? They participated in crime together, and now they're going to to die to give. The King James uses the word malefactors or evil doers. So it's prophesied that Jesus would be numbered with the transgressors, and that certainly describes the one on the right and the one on the left. Think about it. He's the one going about doing good, and he's with these evildoers in his death. Well, that's the cross on the right and left. Now, the one in the middle, who would they have in custody who would match the crimes of these two men? So what kind of, now, for our purposes, we've already read in verse 16 that Barabbas was a notorious prisoner. Do any of the versions have another word besides notorious? What?
Notable.
Notable? All right. Do I have any Three Amigos fans in here? Remember what they said about El Guapo? He was not just famous, he was infamous. Well, that's Barabbas. He's a notable prisoner. And what kind of things do we read about Barabbas? What were the reasons he was put in prison in the first place? What do you remember from the other Gospels?
Leader in sedition and murder, I believe.
Okay, all right. So a leader in insurrection or sedition and murder, Luke tells us. So think of, remember, they're also called rebels. That's what an insurrectionist is. And in this insurrection, this revolt against the government, he had committed murder, probably a Roman official or somebody in the government. So in their insurrection, he committed murder. All right, what else do we read about Barabbas? In John's Gospel, John says, now Barabbas was a, if I remember, a robber. So that fits with the one on the right and the one on the left. So I want you to consider this morning that on that day, three crosses were prepared. And likely they were prepared for three robbers, three rebels, three notorious prisoners who had committed crimes worthy of execution. All right, now let's continue our reading in verse 18. For he that is Pilate knew that because of envy they had delivered him up. So Pilate was able to detect that even though they brought charges against Jesus, did the religious leaders. Remember that he made himself out to be God, blasphemed. He's calling to serve another God besides Caesar. Even though they brought those charges, Pilate knew they want Jesus dead because they envy him. They're jealous. And while, verse 19, he was sitting in the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, have nothing to do with who? That righteous man. For last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him. So even Pilate's wife sees Jesus as innocent. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitudes to ask for Barabbas and to put Jesus to death. But the governor answered and said to them, which of the two do you want me to release for you? So what's happening here is what had become a custom during the Passover feast. Remember, the Passover is a celebration of the Jews being delivered from Egyptian bondage. And so it could be that the Roman governors, just to keep in favor, with this Jewish people to try to satisfy them, had begun a tradition where, as you're celebrating freedom, we'll release a prisoner back on the streets. A kind of a presidential pardon. And so Pilate, who's been thinking like a politician, how am I going to get out of this without getting blood on my hands? I've got an innocent man here that even my wife says he's righteous, that I need to set free. And so what he's thinking is, I'm going to put Jesus next to Barabbas, a notorious prisoner, murderer, rebel, insurrection, robber, and say, which one do you want back in the public? You want this evildoer or the one who's been doing good? And he's thinking, oh, they'll say, release Jesus. We don't want Barabbas back harming people. We don't want Barabbas out there. They'll get me out of this. All right? Look at verse 21. The governor answered, which of the two do you want me to release for you? And they said, Barabbas. Pilate said to them, then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? And they said, let him be crucified. And he said, why? What evil has he done? But they kept shouting out all the more, saying, let him be crucified. And when Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the multitude, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves. And all the people answered and said, his blood be upon us and on our children. And he released Barabbas for them, that after having Jesus scourged, he delivered him to be crucified. Release for us Barabbas. So three crosses, two robbers on the right and left. I submit to you the possibility that the third cross was prepared for Barabbas. And so when they said, release for us Barabbas, I want you to see that Jesus took the place of Barabbas. And in so doing, he took the place for all of us. Barabbas and us. Now the reason I've chosen this character for this time is because I hope it will give us some things to consider when we come to the table of the Lord in a few minutes. And we're thinking about what Jesus did for us. I hope you will consider Barabbas and us. Number one, all of us are worthy of death. Because we have sinned, we are then worthy of sin's punishment, which is death. Romans 6 and verse 23. And you might step back and say, well, wait a minute. I'm not like Barabbas. I would never murder anyone. I'd never kill anybody. How can you say Barabbas and us? Well, have you ever used your words to hurt somebody else? You ever, in your own mind and thoughts, murdered someone made in the image of God? Who, according to the very beginning, is what separates the creation of man from everything else. The reason God required life for life is because you didn't honor the life made in the image of God. And James says when we use our words to curse another, we're doing that to our fellow man made in the likeness of God. So have you ever done that? You say, well, I would never be some kind of a rebel. Well, do you see every time we sin, we contribute to the rebellion made against God that started in the Garden of Eden? Barabbas and us. You'd say, I'd never rob anybody. I don't care how desperate I was. Well, have we ever robbed God of the things that are due Him? Rather it be thanksgiving or praise or honor or glory? Have we ever taken the blessings God has given to us that are meant to serve others and serve Him and just use them to serve ourselves? I want you to consider this morning, we're all guilty. And because of that, we deserve the punishment for our sin, which is death. Barabbas and us. And what Jesus did was to take our place. The one who went about doing good. The one about who Pilate would say, I find no guilt in him. Think about that. He didn't say, now, I don't see any reason he's done anything worthy of death. No, I find no guilt in him. Not one crime. And yet he took our place. We're all worthy of sin's punishment. When he said, I am innocent of this man's blood, that was essentially, I'm innocent of this innocent man and his bloodshed. Barabbas and us, when we come to the table of the Lord this morning, I want you to see Jesus took our punishment. He died for me. Secondly, we have all received mercy when we deserve justice. Now, has anybody ever thought before, when you think about the condition of our world, and you say, well, I just wish God would remove all the evil in the world. Have you ever thought that? Have you ever heard anybody else say that? I just wish we could wake up tomorrow and all the evil would be gone. Well, would there be anybody left to wake up? I mean, when it's our sin, we want mercy. When it's everybody else's sin, we want justice. That was the problem of the prophet Jonah in Nineveh. It had nothing to do with Jonah being afraid of what Nineveh was going to do to him. He didn't want to go preach to the arch enemy of the people of God because he was afraid that God wouldn't punish them and he'd forgive them. And that's what God did. And so the man who's drowning at the bottom of the sea, begging God for a second chance, doesn't want God to give that to other people. We've all received mercy. You ever thought about Barabbas in that jail cell? And I think he had probably resigned himself to his fate. I think he knew, yeah, I'm going to die today. And he wasn't making any excuses. He had done the crime. And he was ready to receive his justice. And so when he hears the centurion coming with the keys to unlock the door, he's probably thinking, well, this is it. Going to the cross. And then he heard Pilate say, you're free to go. Free to go. Do you understand what Jesus said to you when your sins were forgiven? You're free to go. Just like that woman who had been caught in the very act of adultery. He did not excuse her behavior. He called it sin. Remember, he said to her, neither do I condemn you. Go your way and sin no more. So we deserved judgment and justice. But we received mercy. Remember what that other thief said in Luke 23 that we read a moment ago. We are receiving what we deserve. And we all should have. But Jesus gave us freedom. There was a story in the Houston area last softball season. One of the high schools, and there was great controversy because the coach and the team had decided on a slogan they were going to put on their practice jerseys. And as is often the case in things like this, the outcry did not come from anybody on the team or the coaching staff, or really even of the parents of the girls. It came from somebody who happened to see the shirt, and they were outraged because these girls had the audacity to put on their practice jersey things that they, only the team, would see when they were together. I achieved failure. And some of the people in the community said, how can we call our kids failures? How can we not build them up? How can we make them feel bad about mistakes they've made? When the spirit of the jersey was, we want to improve. We want to do better. We want to recognize what we did wrong and fix that. And so this may have been something of my past, but will not define me in the future. And that's what mercy does for us. It causes us to realize the depth to which we've fallen and the heights to which we've been forgiven. And it will only be when we embrace the punishment we should have received that the gift of God's grace will seem so undeserved. It may have been I was a failure. But Jesus said, you're free to go. I deserved justice. The free gift of God is eternal life, mercy. And while Jesus was dying, he even prayed for his enemies. It is said that when Saddam Hussein was executed, they placed the shroud over his head and put the noose around his neck to hang him. He was asked if he had any last words. And he said through the shroud to the guard, "Allah condemn you." Jesus prayed, "Father, forgive them. Mercy." To those of us who have been forgiven, he says, "Go be merciful. Give what I've given to others." That's how we become like him. Can you think of someone this morning who deserves justice? But you can give them mercy. It's what Jesus has done for you. Barabbas and us. And number three, all of us have been given a second life. A new life, a new beginning. That's what Barabbas got. You mean he didn't even have to check in with the centurion every now and then? He didn't have to wear an ankle bracelet? He didn't have a probationary period after his pardon? No. You're free to go. Have you ever wondered what Barabbas did with his second chance? The scriptures don't tell us. We don't read about him again after the crucifixion. And so we wonder, did he become a disciple of Jesus? Did he, in recognition of what Jesus had done for him, now go and proclaim that so others could hear the good news? Did he now become a walking example of the mercy and grace of God that could save a wretch like him? We don't know. Or did he just go back to those bandits and plot another insurrection and commit another crime for which he was executed at a later occasion? We don't know. But if it was that second option, you know what we would say? What a waste. What a waste of forgiveness. What a waste of a gift. What a waste of what Jesus had done for him. Question: what are you going to do with your new life? Your second chance. Are we just going to be the same people we were before? No change. A preacher went for a meeting, a place he had been before, and the first time he was there, he baptized two brothers, two young boys. And so he was excited in being asked to go back to reacquaint himself with these boys. And the first service, one of the boys came out to meet him. And he said, "Where's your brother?" And the boy said, "Oh, you baptized him. But he's no different." Well, is that what we're going to do with our new life? just be who we were before and no change? Or will we use this opportunity to draw even closer to Jesus in appreciation of what he's released us from? That which condemned us and which caused us such great sorrow and grief and shame, and now that's been forgiven. What are we going to do now? Are we going to be, as Peter said, the pig that just returns to the mire or the dog to his vomit? Are we going to use this new life to glorify him who saved us? If not, folks, what a waste. What a waste. The name Barabbas is probably a surname. You recognize those two Hebrew words, bar, which means son of, and Abba, so son of the father. In some of the Greek manuscripts, it has his name being Jesus. So the question would have gone something like this. Which one do you want me to release to you? Pilate asked. Jesus, who is called Barabbas, or Jesus, who is called the Christ? In either case, what that means is, by taking the place of Barabbas, Jesus makes possible that all can become sons of the Father. Barabbas. Sons of God. That now we can live in his presence. Now we have hope of eternity. Now we can tell others the great things he's done for us. Barabbas and us. And so the question that remains, what will you do with Jesus, who is called the Christ? Let's choose to become just like him, that we can be sons and daughters of the Father in heaven. We'll stop there. Thank you so much for your